This is the fourth week we've been going through this book. We've been going through the same book in the high school class that I've been going through out here. I've really enjoyed this book because it focuses mainly on internal. A lot of the things you study, you're not thinking about how other people are doing it all the time. A lot of times you're thinking about how this applies to me, how I can change. And so it's a good study. Tonight we'll be studying overcoming harsh judgments and fault finding. I had one fault already found. I misspelled judgment. So that was a starting one. But it was done in a very gentle way, I'll say that. But yes, spell check usually saves me, but not on this one. This is going to be a discussion class, so hopefully you're ready to talk, because I'm going to ask a lot of questions, and I don't mind dead silence. If I ask a question and no one answers, I'll just sit here until someone does say something. So, okay. Has any of you ever received harsh judgment or witnessed harsh judgment or maybe done some harsh judgment yourself? Or say, has anybody not witnessed that or been a part of that? That's a better way to ask it. There we go. No hands are raised. You know, I believe everybody has both themselves been harsh judgment and also been a victim of harsh judgments. So this is a type discussion we're going to have tonight. And it's kind of going to focus on that because if we get on that path as a congregation, it can lead to some really bad paths or really bad places. So it's a good study to have. And it's a good study. It's an issue that can happen all across the whole brotherhood. We're going to start off with Matthew 7:1. Let me see here. Has anybody heard that one? Judge not, that you be not judged. Is it usually out of context? What context is it usually in? Don't judge me. And people say, you can't judge me. The Bible says, judge not, that you be not judged. So what's wrong with that? Not what it means, is it? What's something you could say back to them if they tell you that?
It's not what it means.
Yep, you can tell what that means. Yep. But they'll tell you you're judgmental, right? And I always say, are you saying in your judgment I'm judgmental? You can't even get to it making sense how they're saying it. So this is the kind of judgment we'll be talking about tonight. It's a condescending, demeaning type judgment. That's what we're going to be focusing on. Okay, let's go to... So we can be judges. John 7:24 says, do not judge according to appearance, but judge with a righteous judgment. And Luke 12:57 says, yes, and why even yourselves do not judge what is right? So what does it mean by judge with a righteous judgment?
The person you got to know what is right and what is wrong
right.
According to God's word.
There you go. A good basis is God's word, isn't it? That's how you know if you judge something righteous or not. So we are to judge, but it needs to be based on a righteous judgment. Right. Yeah, we're going to get into that, and that's a great point, though. Right. Because you can see something happening and be totally off on it. One of the examples I think it was used in a book was a mother that had a son and a daughter. And she's telling a story about her son, how he does everything for his wife, how he lets her go to the beauty parlor anytime she wants. He lets her sleep in. He just treats his wife great. How good his son is when it came to the daughter, he told it was the opposite way. Basically, was mad because it was always the other person's fault, basically. I don't even say that right, but it's always the other person's fault from how you view of the emotions. If you watch a football game, there's a play made where it's a pass interference. So one side of the fans are going to say, no, it wasn't pass interference. The other side is going to say, it was pass interference. Well, you get your emotions involved. That's by appearance. But you got to have the right judgment.
Hey, Troy.
Yep.
There's a sense in which this is give the individual the benefit of the doubt. And sometimes we can only see just part of the picture, and we don't know the full extent. And the experiences of work, previous employer I had, where people don't assume, give that person the benefit of the doubt, and you go to them and ask them, rather than assuming that they right. Make something
That's a good point, and I agree. And that's what Mike said and Jason said. That we'll get to those remedies here in a minute. That's good. Good point, though. So we're using the word harsh judgment. So what's some other words that you could do if you're judging incorrectly? It's like one, it's a harsh judgment. Another one could be it's a hasty judgment. What's some other things you could put onto that? That's rush to judgment, right? And that gets to the appearance that you're talking about. What's some other type of judgments you think we have? Bruce? So they established a different standard for righteousness, I guess, self-righteousness. They wasn't God's standard, it was their own standard. Own standard. Yep. So that'd be an incorrect judgment if you go down that path. Can your anger skew your judgment? Definitely. That can really skew. You get angry with someone and your judgment, how you approach things, can be really off. Have you seen people being hypocritical in their judgment? Yeah. How does that go over? It usually doesn't go over very well. Not well, no. An unloving judgment. Can you have a righteous judgment, be right on the right track, but it be unloving and it still be wrong? Yeah, it needs to be handled with love. Anyway, there's some of the words that we can use to kind of describe some incorrect judgments. Let's look at some Bible examples of people who had some judgmental attitudes. John 12:3-6. Then Mary took a pound of very costly oil of spikenard, anointed the feet of Jesus, and wiped his feet with her hair, and the house was filled with the fragrance of the oil. One of the disciples, Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, who would betray him, said, "Why was this fragrant oil not sold for 300 denarii and given to the poor?" Then he said, not that he cared for the poor, but because he was a thief and had the money box, and he used to take what was put in it. So who was being judgmental in this case? Judas. Why was he being judgmental? His greed, selfish. Yeah. So, again, I want you to start looking at, as we go through these different examples we're going to see in the Bible and some other ones, is you got to look in your own heart at times when you're judgmental to figure out what your motive is. Do you think he was thinking that through, or was he being judgmental in his right in his own mind, right? He thought he was correct in that judgment, but it says heart was off. It was an incorrect judgment. Does that make sense? So you can get that same thing as yourself. You can be thinking you're right on your judgment, but if you're not in tune with your heart, you can be off in your judgment. Right.
There's spiritual benefits for the way the oil is used. And there's been material benefits when it had been given to the poor. Judas was not there.
Yeah. So, no, he said something else, but not what he was thinking, really.
Yeah.
And I put it in Romans 2 because it says, "Therefore, you're excused, O man, whoever you are, you judge, for in whatever you judge another, you condemn yourself. For who judge practice the same things." So basically that's a hypocritical type judgment, and that's kind of what Judas was being. Let's go to the next example, Luke 18:9-14. "As he also spoke this parable to some who trusted in themselves, they were righteous and despised others. Two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and one a tax collector. Pharisee stood and prayed thus with himself, 'God, I thank you that I'm not like other men, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even as this tax collector. I fast twice a week, I give tithes to all that I possess.' And the tax collector, standing far off, would not so much as raise his eyes to heaven, but he beat his breast, saying, 'God, be merciful to me, a sinner.' I tell you, this man went down the house justified rather than the other. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. So he was being judgmental in this passage. And so why was he being judgmental? What was this benefit of this? He's trying to build himself up. Yeah. And can that be a major issue in the brotherhood? Yeah, can you find yourself, maybe you could, that could happen to you? Maybe feeling down, you're around someone else, and then you, if you take them down, you can make yourself feel better. I've seen that happen all the time. If you go to any middle school, that happens all the time. A lot of insecurities drive a lot of bad behaviors. You know, hopefully when they get older, more mature, that stops. But middle school, it's probably the worst there is in that area. Okay, let's look at another example. Then Saul was very angry and saying displeased him. He said, "They have ascribed David 10,000, and to me they have ascribed only 1,000. Now what more can they have but the kingdom?" So Saul eyed David from that day forward. So who's being judgmental here? So why was he being judgmental? He was jealous. Yeah. What else was he? So that's jealous. He was something else. Insecure? Do you think he had a little anger? Oh, yeah. He had a lot. He had high emotions, right? And was that a quick feeling he had that went away? No. Yeah, he went after that and got caught in that till deal. So that's skin. We got to look at our own heart. When you're judging someone, you think someone, you have like irritation to someone, how they're acting, it's time to take time to look at your own heart and see why that's driving that thought and that emotion, right? That can be hard to do. And this is the whole deal of this book. Every section we've been over in this book has you examining your own heart, which is the hardest thing to do. That's our biggest blind spot we have, is ourselves. All right, so the next one we're going to talk about, what damage can be done handling judgment the wrong way? If you handle judgment the wrong way, what damage can be done? Burn bridges. Yeah. Push people away. In biblical terms, that's causing division. Yeah, strife and division. So what's the Bible say about strife and division? And Titus 3:10 says, reject the advice of man after the first and second admonition. And then the encouragement part is, endeavoring to keep unity of the spirit and the bond of peace. Being judgmental in a congregation, in a brother, in a family, basically, if you stay on that, or if you're around someone who does that, whatever, it starts dividing. And that's can drive some strong issues in a congregation. So again, this is something that we need to keep as a goal and keep in our heart. Can someone trying to handle a situation, like say someone's doing something wrong, and they're trying to handle it rightly, can they still cause a lot of issues in how they try to handle it? Yeah, it can be on both sides, right? It can be, you're saying it can be on the receiving end of it, right? They approach you something, it could cause division that way. But also, can someone trying to do the right thing handle it badly, basically? I've been in a congregation that I left about 6 months before the split happened, whatever, but there were some issues going on at that time when everybody was just handling everything incorrectly. They thought they were being right in their actions, right, or how they're trying to correct, but if their heart was so emotional, they were handling it very badly. So you can be absolutely right about what you're trying to fix, but if your emotions are high, you can do a lot more damage than good at times. Okay, let's see here. For someone who's constantly judging others, what are some negative impacts to them? And this is something the author has said, and I'll also get your opinions on what he said. They can be blind to their own faults. Example, the parable of the Pharisee and the tax collector. Have you known someone who's been blind to their own faults? Have you known someone who's always focusing on everybody else's faults? then, but you're thinking, they don't even know their own faults. You ever thought that about yourself? What's the thought? It's so obvious everybody else's faults to you, right? It's so easy. But you're going like, what are my issues? And it's the same fact that everybody thinks they're normal, when in fact we know none of us are normal. That's the whole deal about looking at your own heart at this. When you see the faults of everybody, you need to spend some time thinking about looking at God's word and figuring out what your own faults are, right? The next point he said, it will destroy friendships, picking their friends to pieces. They will come to mark them off their list one by one, and their friends will come to loathe them. If you've been around someone who's judgmental, after a while, it just wears you out, doesn't it? Because what are you constantly hearing from them? Even if it's not against you, what are you constantly hearing?
Negative,
right? And that just brings you down. And then if their guns ever gets points to you, then that pretty much ends the friendship. They will start to fail to see the beauty and virtues of others. If every time you see anybody, you're thinking about what they're doing wrong, I mean, what kind of family is that here? If all I see is everything you're doing wrong, then the beauty of this congregation goes away. How many good qualities do people have? They have a lot of good qualities. How do you find those good qualities? I'll be quiet. Do what? Look for them. Exactly. That's an easy answer. You look for the good qualities in people and you'll find them. But if you're looking for the negative, guess what you're going to find? You'll find those as well. That is true. And that gets back to the insecurity, kind of build yourself up.
Sometimes when you see that, you're looking for the positives, it causes you to self-reflect, why am I not that way? Why am I not meeting that standard? Maybe I should be acting
right.
Better, but that's a tough place to be. And then also it's hard to be happy for them if you're in that place. So there's multiple things going on there.
And turn that around, a good way to look at positives in this, when I see the positive things y'all have, I'm happy you're here. I'm happy you're around me. I'm happy you're part of the team. You know what I'm saying? But if you look at the negatives, you're thinking, why are you here? You're bringing the team down. It's a whole perspective change. So look at the positives. And it gives them, it says they'll never be happy. And the last point was the mud thrower will get plastered. So if you're always out, see someone always judging people, then usually what happens? Usually comes back at you. And there's a verse with that. With what judgment you judge, you'll be judged. With what measure you use, it'll be measured back to you. In Galatians 6:7, do not be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatever a man sows, that will he reap. So what's that first verse say to you? That's a big one. Well, that first verse, for you judge, you'll be judged. Oh, yeah, other people, right. Yeah. You see it in politics. Some guy's up there, he's railing on everything, whatever, and he's doing the same thing. He gets caught, and then he gets attacked and thrown out of office. Right? Right. So on Judgment Day, how do you want to be seen before God on your judgments? You want mercy. Isn't it odd that anytime someone else is in a problem, does something bad, you're like, oh, they need to be punished. Right. And then as soon as you do something, you start thinking, why did I do that? There has to be a good reason I did that. You're still trying to justify or figuring out why you did something bad. Well, that same attitude you have toward yourself, you should point to other people. Right. You should give them that same consideration you give yourself. Go ahead.
Galatians 6:1.
Yes, I do. Okay, so the next section is going to be remedies for harsh judgment. This is from the chapter of love. Love suffers long, is kind, does not envy, Love does not parade itself, is not puffed up, does not behave rudely, does not seek its own, is not provoked, thinks no evil, does not rejoice in iniquity, but rejoices in truth, bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, and endures all things. And from that, what I did is make a list. Because when you talk to people, you want to talk to people in love, right? That you're approaching someone. So I made a list of things we should consider. So this is things before you go talk to someone you should ask yourself. I think it's a good remedy to help you when you approach someone. Again, judgments need to be made. Conversations need to be had, right? That's part of how we work as a congregation. But it's how we do it that's important, right? So what it is, each bullet point, this corresponds to the things underlined above. So when you go talk to someone, are you ready to be long-suffering with them? What does that mean? Patient. Well, as soon as you talk to them, will they change? Maybe, yeah, it may take time, right? Yeah, as soon as you see something, even yourself, say, I want to lose weight, right? Can I change immediately? I may struggle with that, right? Same thing in the spiritual world. You may have to help them along. They may have, maybe doing something, they may fall back again. You need to help encourage them to get back again. You'll say it's a back and forth. So will you be long-suffering with them? Are you being kind when you approach them? So when you approach and talk to them, and when you finish the conversation with them, when they finish, will they say, "That he was really kind to me"? That's something. These are things that are kind of easy to hear, but thinking about it when you're in the situation, you're addressing someone that you had something with, these are some things that it's hard to do. They go against your instinct, right? Someone says faulted you and you want to go talk to them. Are you going to be long-suffering with them? Are you going to be kind? Well, they say you were kind to them. Who thinks that's easy? That's not easy. It's not easy for anybody. No. But you can have disagreements with someone. I always put it in this perspective. Think of someone you really respect in your life that you looked up to, right? Maybe it was your father, your mother, whatever it was in your life. And you have to go talk to them about a fault. How are you going to approach them, right? Are you going to be long-suffering with them? Are you going to be kind? Right? It falls in this. It has to do with true love and respect. And that's how you approach other people. Do I have any enmity toward that person? You have to look in your heart. Am I making a show of the situation? You mean, am I going out, hey, look, guys, I'm going to go set that person right. Watch this. Right? Do I think I'm better than them? That's the one you really be careful on. Because when you see a fault with someone, the first thing you think, I'm better than them. I'm going to go straight, set them straight. We are all forgiven. So that shouldn't be in your thought. In this way, I'm going to handle this rude. Now, this is a personal for me. I grew up in a very blunt family. I'm the quiet one in the family. There was no elephants in the room. Anything that came out, it was coming out and it was direct. That worked well in our family, but people on the outside, how well does that work? So I've had to learn over time that when I step into something, I'm not to get in trouble. Does anybody else have that trouble here? Don't have to raise hands. But you learn when you do that, that sometimes that is not the best approach, is it? Anyway.
Detroit.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Avoid ever making correction. And that's not the
issue. I'll say this. You shouldn't avoid making a correction, but we'll get into it. But you shouldn't look forward to it either.
Right.
If you're look, that's a sign for anybody. If you're looking forward to making the correction, don't go make that correction. That is not going to go well, right? That's a sign in your heart you should look forward. If it's hurting you to go talk to someone, then you're in the right mindset.
Yep. Because I think we don't like
And that's why we're having this lesson, I talk, whatever it is to, we're going to talk more, but figure out how to maybe do it better. Am I having this conversation to make myself feel better? Some people get all pent up and enraged, and that you want to go tell them that because it makes you feel better. You're releasing, you're venting, right? That's not a good thing to do either. Talk to this person because I'm angry. That's not a good reason. I'm assuming the worst about this person. That, like we said, your perception needs to be right. Think of the best of them. Am I happy they messed up? Look, I finally get to put, you know, I'm mad at them about something else. They get my chance to go get back at them. Are you ready to bear their burdens with this person? Are you ready to bear all things? Are you ready to have faith in them and believe all things that they can get better? Sometimes we go talk to people and we don't think they're going to get any better. You mean, if you go with that attitude, it's just not a good attitude. You need to have faith that they can turn things around and believe. Do you have hope for them? And are you ready to endure with them? This is a good checklist where you go talk to someone to help get your mindset right. If you can get your mind in this and you have these conversations, I think it really helps the conversation go better. Because when someone's coming to talk to you and you can see they don't have the right attitude, you can see it. You can see it on the face. You can see the words they choose, the emotions, and that puts you on the defense. But if they know you're there because you care about them, you're wanting the best, and they know you love them, the conversation goes much better. Even though they may not like it, then when they get away from it, they'll know that he did come because he loved me. Right. It is difficult when the first time you're going to talk to that person is when there's an issue. That is not a fun situation to get into at all. Because that's what they think. The only time you care about me is when I've done something wrong. I had a weird, I don't want to say it was weird to me, I'll say at the time, how it hit me. I gave a lesson a long time ago when I was young on something to do with the book of Revelation. And I said Revelations a couple times. And then, you know, everybody said, came to me and said, good lesson. And then one guy came up to me and goes, it's not said Revelations, it's Revelation. And that's all he said, and he walked off. And I was like, interesting thing he got from my lesson. But I'll say, but only, you got to remember that it should be the only thing you're pointing out is something bad. It should be also encouragement. And that's something I struggle with. I did not come from a family that encourages everybody. I came from a family that points everything out. So that's something I need to work on and get better, is saying things as encouragement. You know, and the two main brunt of mine is Kevin and Sam. I harass them all the time. But that's just the way my family was, always joking and stuff. But I hope they both do know from all the harassment. I still do love them a lot. Okay. Another remedy for harsh judgment. Yes. Think about this. Therefore, what do you want men to do to you, do also to them, for this is the law of the prophets. What's this called? The golden rule, right? So you think through this. If I messed up, how would I want someone to come talk to me? You always think about how I would want to be treated before you go talk to someone. That way it helps you know how to be treated. Makes sense? My oldest one, Alex, she always said this one was, do unto them as they've done unto you. That was her thought process on this. And so it's not that way. If they've been mean to you, it's not your chance to get back to them. This is something to keep in mind. For all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. Examine yourselves whether you're in the faith, to test yourselves. How does knowing that all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God affect how you talk to other people and approach other people? Brent said it great. All includes me. Right? Are you, do what?
Common ground.
So when you look at them, you're not looking at them like this, right? You're looking at them like this. All right, and there's other verses that says count other people better, so you're actually looking this way, right? So that helps your attitude when you talk to people. Know that the same salvation and the sacrifice that Christ made for you was also made for them. Therefore, you both have a chance to go to heaven. Okay, here's the good one here. That's Matthew 7, 3 through 5. And why do you look at the speck in your brother's eye and do not consider the plank in your own? Or how do you say to your brother, let me remove the speck from your eye, and look, a plank is in your own eye? Hypocrite, first remove the plank from your own eye, and then you'll see clearly to remove the speck from your eye. Okay. So what do you learn when you remove the plank from your own eye? You see better, but what do you learn from that process of pulling the plank out of your eye? You learn it hurts to poke on your eye, right? So how fast are you going to be when you try to put the speck out of the other guy's eye, right? If you've been through all that pain, you knew how bad it was, the change and your own sins and you dealt with, then when you go deal with someone else, what attitude do you have? Empathy. You have empathy for it. That's hypocritical. And how careful are you with that? Because you know, anytime you do a sin in your own life, it can be really painful. You can see the disappointment you've made. You can see how the effect of it all. And you're going to work with someone else. You have a lot of empathy for that situation. It's not a self-righteous time. It's a time that you've been. And I like how he uses, he says, plank. It's like, it's a beam. And so once you go through that, then you can clearly see that your attitude and what you're doing for that person. Okay. There's the parable of talents, right? What does that say about us as individuals? You have the three different people, different talents, right? What does that say about us? Are we all the same? No, we're not all the same. That's, we'll take one thing from. But what's this one say here? There's no more bane, desiring the pure milk of the word that you may grow thereby. What does that say about us individuals? Do what? You can get better. Are we all at the same stage of life or spiritual life? No, we're all different maturities, right? So we have different talents, different maturities. So how can we take that into our conversations? Because when someone's making a mistake, it's obvious to you that's a mistake, right? As you look down on them. But they may be what? A different talent, different maturity level?
We can also learn from how Jesus treated individuals. And he tended to be a lot more gentle.
Yep.
People that were new to religion, so to speak. Whereas the scribes and Pharisees, they were very harsh to him. And because they knew better.
Right. And we're going to cover how he was gentle in the Devo, right? Because that's actually the perfect example of that. Okay, I think I have to speed up a little more. We're out of time. Speak evil no one, but peaceable, gentle, showing all humility to men. So this is teaching us to treat people with what? Do what? Respect. It'd be kind and gentle when you handle them. So when they finish the conversation with them, they will say he was kind and he was gentle, right? That's the kind of attitude when you come toward these people. We should be known for being gentle. Okay, so what is this teaching us? How do you talk to someone? Well, what does it say to him? Does it say go? Go to him? Right. What's that mean? It means go to him. Have a face-to-face conversation. Right. What happens during a face-to-face conversation?
Right.
You'll see some body language. You're going to see a lot of body language. And what can you do with that body language? When you can interpret a lot, right? So say I write a letter out to you, all the things you've done wrong, I hand that letter to you, right? And you first start off, and it starts going south. There's no time to stop the letter. It keeps going, right? But when you're having a conversation face-to-face, you see the expressions and stuff going, you can learn to adapt in the conversation, right? It tells you how it's going. So I think this is huge. If you have something going on with someone or brother, go sit down with them. Have a conversation. There's more things than that that come out of it. One, just read the body language and see what's going on. And one, you took the time to come and actually see them. But when you're doing this, you get the whole story. A lot of times when you send a letter or whatever, you don't get to hear what's going on. Right? We just talked about the different maturity levels, different talents. Example I'll give, since we're getting close to running out of time, is that I've talked to a lot of people who stopped attending congregation or church or coming to worship, right? If I go to them and say, you know what Hebrews 10:25 says? Do they usually know what that says? About forsaking assembly? They usually know it says that. You know what you usually find out? There's something else going on. It's usually rarely ever that they don't understand you should be here to worship. It's usually something else going on. You don't get that from a text, whatever. It's when you go sit down and talk to people. Then as you get to know them and talk to them more, they start opening up and you start hearing their troubles. And it gets back into that bearing the burdens, working with them through the other issues to help them go. Anyway, so this is stuff toward the end here. I want you to focus on before you talk to people. Put yourself in their shoes. Count yourself lower than them. Be ready to share the burdens. Be patient and long-suffering. That's a big one. There should be no attempt to get the higher ground in these discussions. If you're going in to try to win the discussion, that's not going to go well. Always keep in mind their value as a person, and always keep in mind their potential. They may be acting in a way that they really shouldn't be acting, but keep in mind that they can change. I had a brother that did not do well in high school on how his behavior. Dad had to actually at the one point kick him out of the house because how bad he was doing, right? But from that, he turned around, became very faithful. He's an elder in the church. You can see the potential. Work with them. And it took my dad a long time to get before he kicked him out of the house. Believe me, there was a lot of working in between that. It wasn't just the first thing he did was that. There was a lot of love and caring. It's got to that point. But you got to go and walk that path. It's a long-suffering path. It was years. It was his own child. And that was a tough conversation. I was there when he had it with him. He was very upset, my dad was. So it's just not an easy thing to do. Right? But it's something we have to do. Okay, there's some scripture I had left over that we could hit until the time runs out, whatever. Matthew 5:7, blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. So if you're mercy to other people, then you'll have mercy for you. If anybody's taken in a trespass, you who are spiritual, restore them in gentleness. So speak and so do as those who will be judged by the law of liberty. For judgment without mercy to the one who shows no mercy, mercy triumphs over judgment. Therefore, the prisoner of the Lord, beseech you to walk worthy of the calling which you were called, and with all lowliness and gentleness, with long-suffering, bearing one another in love, endeavoring to keep the unity of the Spirit and the bond of peace. These are some good scriptures to consider. I think there's one more. Here's one more. Okay. I'll end with this one, Philippians 2:14. Therefore, if there's any consolation in Christ, any comfort and love, any fellowship of the Spirit, any affection and mercy, fulfill my joy by being like-minded, having the same love, being of one accord, of one mind. Let nothing be done from selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliest of mind, let each esteem others better than himself. Even when they're doing wrong, still think of them as better than you. And that's what Paul, you hear Paul say that. What did Paul say he was? The chief of sinners. He had the attitude of lowliness when he approached people. I bet you when he talked to people, there's the same example we'll see in a minute when we talk to Moshe about how Jesus approached people. That's the end of the lesson. I appreciate your time.